Well, hey, everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Very pleased to be here in the studio with you as we are in October, which is Clergy Appreciation Month. For any of you that have followed Focus on the Family over the years, you know that we celebrate Clergy Appreciation Month. In fact, we have observed it since 1994, when I think we kind of kicked it off back that in that year. But we don't like to take credit for being in charge of Clergy Appreciation Month. That is what our good friend H.B. London told me in the past. It's not only about Focus on the Family. So it is now nationally and internationally observed. And so the goal is to really recognize the role that pastors play within our churches and within our own lives, and recognize that the job that they have is very difficult. And so Focus has for years tried to come alongside our pastors and support them and their families as they do great work. Later on in the show, we're going to be talking to Candace. She's going to be answering a question on this is not to say this has anything to do with pastors. This is going to be about like older men in the church who kind of like flirt with this girl. We have a listener who wrote in, and I guess just some of these older guys are getting a little creepy and she needs to know how to deal with that. So Candace will weigh in on that. Maybe she should talk to the pastor. Anyway, and then in our culture segment, we have Dr. Randy Carlson. He is the author of The Power of One Thing, and he's going to talk about intentional living in general. But you know that we also talk about that in relation to your involvement in the local church and even to the point of membership and accountability within that structure. So make sure you stay tuned for that. He is a great radio broadcaster and author and a counselor himself. But here we are sitting here ready to launch into a round table, and we've got a couple familiar faces. Here is Martha to my right. Martha,
I'm back.
I know she is. Here she is, ready to weigh in on pastors, because we're going to let her share a few of her opinions and anecdotes related to them.
I've had a few pastors in my lifetime already, so
that's good. That is very good. In different places too.
This
so
is true.
That's good. So very varied. Also, Andrew Hess is back, whom I like to call Brother Andrew. Andrew, welcome.
Hello. Thanks.
So, having worked with pastors and a pastor himself, in a sense, he marries people.
I do.
He has a degree and he marries people. So that's good. But we haven't scuttled him off to a church yet to make him just stay there. So we let him work here at Focus on the Family. We also welcome a newcomer to the table, Rajiv Shah. Rajiv, welcome.
Yes, thank you.
Very glad to have you in the mix. We've tried to get you a couple times, but I think you've turned us down.
No, I don't think you have.
I distinctly remember at least once asking you when you were out of town or something. I can't remember what it was for.
Oh,
I think it was, I don't know. I don't know what it was for, but okay. So anyway, I want to talk about pastors. And the first question I want to ask, now, most people out there know that my dad was a pastor. So I grew up as a pastor's kid, though he did not pastor for most of the time that I was growing up. So it was a little bit weird. I just got the name with nothing else. But what is your first memory of a pastor in your life or in your church, and what did you kind of take that as meaning, or what was the influence there in your own experience?
My first memory, well, really not a memory, but my baby dedication. I think that was my first experience.
What? You remember your baby dedication?
Wow, I don't remember it, but I think that was my first experience with the pastor, with his blessing on my life. And it's pretty cool, the way to start.
Well, did people tell you it was a good experience? Like, was he legit?
Well, I'm sure there's photos or something.
Okay. So but what about your first memory of a pastor? Well, let me throwing out examples, Martha, that you can't even like attest to personally. She's like, you're trying to get credit for things. You don't even know if you were dedicated. You don't know, you're just taking that on hearsay.
Oh.
Whatever.
Okay, moving on. Someone else.
Okay, someone else. While Martha thinks of a real experience
you
can remember.
My first memory with the pastor was when I was baptized with my two younger brothers. And I just remember, like, we all went into the pastor's office, and I'd never been in there before, and he just kind of grilled me, or at least at the time it felt like he was grilling me, just asking me about my faith, and I think he was just making sure that this was my parents' idea, which it wasn't, it was mine, but I think my brothers just tagged along, like, oh yeah, that sounds fun, so get to play in the water at church, so anyway, so I just remember just having to kind of that, okay, he knows what he's talking about, and I want to make sure I say the right answers. And it was very much just this respect for him that he knew a lot about the Bible, and I wanted to make sure that I didn't get it wrong in front of him, you know, like say the wrong Savior or something. So that's my first memory.
All right.
You know, I was also a pastor's kid, and I think one of the first memories that I had, I think, was also being baptized, but it was it was a really special experience to be baptized by my dad. And that was really, really great, you know, going through the conversation, kind of like what Andrew did of, you know, are you saved? Are you dedicated to the Lord? You know, going through all those questions, it was really special to be able to go through those publicly with my dad. And so that's definitely a very distinct and really fond memory that I have growing up.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for me, I remember growing up my first few years in a small church in Minnesota, the same town my mom lives in now. And I just remember our pastor, Al, I remember his booming voice. And I was like, all pastors must have this voice, you know, and it was just kind of like the voice of God. And when he would preach, you know, and kind of how like some of those pastors, the old school ones, like had a different preaching voice from just their talking one. So Pastor Al was kind of like that.
Yes.
And apparently, now here I just dissed Martha, but apparently I have a story that I do not have recollection of, but he was apparently preaching on Paul, doing a series on Paul and the letters, the epistles, and so it was always Paul this, and apparently I just turned to my mom in the middle of the service and spoke up very loudly and said, Mom, why is Pastor Al always talking about Paul? I thought he's supposed to talk about Jesus.
And so, oh, wow, that sounds about right.
Poor
yeah.
Pastor.
Yeah, Christ-centered, reformed from a very early age.
That was actually pretty good theology.
It was, he just kept talking about Paul, and I was a little concerned that there was no...
It was kind of passive of you to address that with your mom and, you know, not him directly, but crowd around you.
Had it been a couple of years later, I probably would have been a little more bold. My normal pattern right now. But okay, so let's talk about... So obviously, you know, we kind of have these larger than life visions of pastors when we're small and what that looks like. But how has that evolved over the years? Because obviously you probably had other experiences within churches. You moved away from home. You went to college. You had experiences there. You probably had college chapels for those of you that went to Christian colleges. And then now on your own, you know, and good and bad, what really, you know, how has your view of pastors and your experience and interaction with them been shaped?
I think for me, early on, I thought that the pastor's role was just to get the weekly sermon ready. And I mean, from when I was young, and I think as I've grown in my faith and even in college, been involved with different pastors, I've seen how there's so much more to the shepherding of a people than just, I mean, I think when I was a kid, I would have told you, oh yeah, like during the week, they just sit and study. They just get to study the Bible the whole time. And then we get the gleanings on Sunday, you know, the best of their study. And I think, even during my time in seminary, I quickly realized, wow, that's, you know, if you can get, you know, a quarter of your time to prepare the sermon, you're doing well. And I mean, I remember hearing my professor say that and thinking, you've got to be kidding. A quarter of your time? That just seems like such a small percentage. But when you think about all the other things that a pastor does, I mean, just the meeting with people and some counseling and even in a lot of smaller church settings, running the daily finances and leading the staff, there's just so much to do that I think that was one of the things that kind of switched in my mind was, wow, he's not just primarily a student of the word who's getting a weekly message together.
Yeah, I think I had the opposite experience, actually, in the sense of the pastors that I always knew were like, you know, cleaning chalkboards and opening up the doors and helping people, you know, visiting them in the hospitals. And so I kind of forgot that, oh, they actually preach sermons too, and they actually have to study. And it was actually when I went and lived in Minneapolis and went to John Piper's church, Bethlehem Baptist, where I learned that he like spent 40 to 50 hours a week on a sermon. And I'm like, what else does he do? And I guess not, they have a staff that does a lot of other stuff. He doesn't clean any chalkboards.
I've heard of pastors that their job is visiting people in the hospital, and at those bigger churches, they just can spread it out with lots of staff.
Yeah.
I think growing up, I just remember distinctly pastors coming alongside and saying, hey, I love you. I care about you. Let me help you. Let me disciple you. Let me take you under my wing. Let me tell you how to read the Bible. Let me walk you through these basics of life and how does scripture connect to life and connecting all those dots and things and practically applying. That was when, through my high school years and into my college years and even now, having someone around as a pastor that really wants to invest. And I think that's really important and definitely a part of what a pastor's job is, but also really crucial to me personally. And I know that there are many others out there that have had the same experience of pastors coming alongside them and really making a huge impact on a person-to-person level.
Mm-hmm. So what does that mean for, because I think a lot of us have had the experience of going to like mega churches and stuff like mm-hmm. that where you don't have direct access to the pastor. And do you think there's something lost in that? Or what do you get from pastors that are more leaders, directors, you know, versus the ones who are just, you know, old school, small town, come on over with some coffee and biscuits and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that is something I've wrestled with. I actually go to a mega church here in Colorado Springs, and I've often thought about that's one of the challenges of a larger church. And I think one of the ways that my church addresses that is to really focus on communities within the larger community and how it is important for us to make sure we're connected. I mean, one of the reasons that, you know, I sit here as a single man I'm 31, but I've officiated 5 weddings. And I think one of the reasons is because people know me and they feel connected to me in a way that they're not connected to any of the pastors at our church. Mm-hmm. So I've often reflected on that. You know, when friends ask me to do that, I think, you know, probably part of the reason is that because we're in a larger church context, that they feel like they know me in a way that they don't know some of the staff at the church, perhaps.
If I was really honest about my first memory of with a pastor or whatever, I'd probably look back to my youth pastor, really, because mm-hmm. he knew this small group of 10 to 15 people, and he traveled in an RV with us once from Minnesota to Florida in July with no air conditioning, and you get to know a person well in that situation. Aww. So, I guess youth pastors, too, we could throw in the mix here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think
and part of what a pastor's responsibility is, and this is a difficult one, to create an environment where true Christ-centered community is built, refined, and that's difficult. You know, that's challenging. And some mega churches, I've been to a lot of mega churches in my life, whether visiting on a Sunday here or there or going to them for years at a time. I've been to a lot of mega churches, and it can be very challenging to find that type of community of people coming alongside you and saying, this is a sin pattern that we need to address with you because we love you, and this is great. This is a triumph and something you've succeeded at. Let's celebrate with you. Finding that community, it can be difficult. And my wife and I, we've chosen here to be in a smaller church where we do have that community, and it's easier to do that type of thing when you have a few hundred people than a few thousand. And so we've really noticed the difference that the community has faces to it, they have hands to it, and there's a lot of practical things that the body does for each other that we really appreciate. And it's really a responsibility of the pastor, and our pastor does it very well, of creating an environment and teaching from the pulpit that says we are responsible to care for one another. And of course, the different size churches, there are different dynamics and different ways to do that. And that's one thing I really appreciate about our pastor, that he's able to do that well mm-hmm. and connect his teaching to practical application.
Yeah. So the pastors that you guys have really loved, I mean, the ones, whether they're the ones you grew up with or the ones that you experienced in college or beyond or even now, or now that you have the freedom to choose a church based on, you know, where you're going to go or what town you're in, what do you think really is the most important to you? What for you stands out and it's like, this is a great pastor and this person has really impacted me personally?
You know, one thing that really sticks out to me of a great pastor is his level of humility. And how do we define that? So we look at, and I'm the first one to say that, you know, having been involved in, you know, direct contact with a lot of churches through other jobs and other ministries I've worked for, you see a lot of pastors who are alone. It's lonely at the top. And having a group, a community around pastors themselves to be able to say, yes, this is how we do ministry. This is what we're teaching. This is how we treat our employees and the people who work for us. Having the humility to submit yourself to that type of scrutiny and criticism and being open to that, that has really, I've seen that really take a huge impact with pastors. So they're not doing it alone. They're not carrying their burden alone, but they're alongside other pastors doing those things together and creating an environment where they can be accountable to one another. And it's difficult, you know, what does accountability look like? And it's changed forms over the past few decades in the church. But that's one thing that I think when I've seen pastors do that, it really reflects well in their teaching and in their pastoring.
Yeah, I think for me, I mean, I've also been at churches with a lot of different pastors. And I think for me, the things that stand out are a pastor's love for the people. And I think that that's something that more and more I'm seeing is just, I actually had an opportunity to work with a pastor once, and I was his research assistant and was helping him with sermons and helping with illustrations. And I was young at the time, and a lot of my illustrations were these, like these Puritan quotes that were real like, like in your face. And I just remember him saying one time, I will never use that because what about the people that don't get it? And it comes across more stinging than I want it to. And that was a real teachable moment for me because I realized that even as we want to communicate truth, we want to do it with this love, and we don't want to beat people up with the truth. And I think that was something that I always look for in a pastor is, you know, do they have this spirit of love in them that even as they're saying things and calling and challenging the people, but they're still doing it as a shepherd who ultimately cares for the people. And I think that pastors that communicate that really have it in their heart. You know, that just always is powerful for me.
You need to find those more loving Puritan quotes.
Yeah. And they are out there. They are out there. I love the Puritans.
Those harsh winters, they kind
minority.
Of brought people down.
Yeah.
Exactly.
One sermon that stands out in my mind actually came from a DVD series that I got free in the mail because I get lots of free stuff as editor of Boundless. But it was by Andy Stanley called Why Worry? And it's a 3-part series from his church that he did. And it really just hit me at the right time with the right message and changed my perspective of how I'm going to trust God and think about the future. And I've shared it with tons of people since then of you've got to listen to this. And my small group did it this past summer or went through the DVDs. And I think what stood out about that was just its application and just his delivery mm-hmm. as well is mm-hmm. really excellent, I think, personally.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's something good to talk about here because I think especially in our generation, we can easily gravitate, not that I'm saying you did this, Martha, or this is bad, but we can easily think of like those rock stars and we're like, oh my goodness, you know, I just love their preaching. I love their preaching. And either, you know, unless we're going to pick up everything and move to a New York City or an Atlanta or somewhere where just one of these pastors is just rocking it in a big church, we're probably going to do podcasting or we're going to listen to sermons online, but we know at the same time that we don't want to encourage young adults to just say, well, you know, it doesn't matter if you're in a local church, just listen to sermons. And as long as you've got all your sermons, you can discuss them with your friends, that's okay. But at the same time, it's great to be able to avail ourselves of these great pastors who are out there. And who are some of your favorites? Who do you listen to when you're not listening to your hometown pastor?
I listen to a lot of John Piper, Tim Keller, like Andy Stanley. I think he's a great communicator. Who else? I like to listen to Alistair Begg, Erwin Lutzer. I mean, and Mark Driscoll. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot. You're right. It is one of those fascinating times in history where there's so much out there. I mean, if you just took the sermons of the people that I just mentioned, you couldn't listen to him in a lifetime. Mm-hmm. You couldn't listen to all the stuff. I mean, John.
I was about to ask you that. Do you have a full-time job?
I don't think you could listen to John Piper's sermon on Romans in your lifetime.
I think it took him 10 years.
It took several years to do Romans.
Yeah, MacArthur preached through the entire Bible in 30 years. He just finished that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's amazing how much there is out there. And I've often thought, you know, those who are listening, somebody needs to create a website that kind of gleans the best of the best, you know, so that I don't have to listen to stuff that's not the best.
Because only the best for you,
I have
Andrew.
A full-time job, as you guys just pointed out.
Listening to sermons.
Yeah.
No, what we need to do is we need to pick the sermons that we think you need to hear, and then we can set up a blog or a site.
Yeah, I could like fill out a profile and they could send me, here's some sermons you probably need.
Exactly.
So. But
that's good. That's a good roundup of folks. My goodness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's difficult because I don't listen, to be completely honest, I don't listen regularly to any pastor specifically outside of my wife and I's church. That's something I haven't spent the time doing. I do like to read, though. I like to read a lot of pastors. My wife is a big fan of John Piper and Mark Driscoll, and so naturally, I also listen and read their material. But I try to keep my own personal listening. I try to keep it very diverse and not just limit it to maybe one theological persuasion. I have a charismatic background, and so I do try to keep up with what's going on there. There's several pastors I listen to in that space. I also like to listen to a lot of the Reformed teachers. And then you have a lot of the guys on the radio that I'm in the car, I'm driving around, and I love Charles Stanley. That's someone I just love and I always have. And so being able to listen to a lot of different things, I really want to do my best to listen to the whole counsel of God as much as I can. And so I just try to stay diverse as I can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of do some of that too. You know, it's funny, whenever I go on road trips, I'll usually turn on the local station and listen, especially on a Sunday if I'm driving, and see what pastors mm-hmm. are out there just with their sermons and stuff. And that's always a fun thing. Or I know when a couple years ago I was driving through the Midwest and stayed in a motel, and in the lobby there were some CDs of a local pastor's sermons, and I grabbed one and listened to it, and it was super like down home, like blessed be the Lord, and just all that. It was really fun, and like it was just a really cute, I thought it was great, and it just reminded me of, you know, that brought me back to, with all the stuff I have access to here at Focus and on the internet, it brought me back to the fact that there are pastors out there in small towns and small churches that are still just, you know, preaching the word, and you know, maybe some of them didn't make it all the way through seminary or whatever, or they just, you know, love the Lord and got their book learning somewhere, you know, but I just think it's kind of fun to see their excitement and all of that. But
yeah, I think that's a good point too, that, you know, it's easy for us to gravitate towards some of the, you know, the big names, but that mm-hmm. their ministry in God's eyes is the same as the, you know, the pastor in a small community who has, you know, 30 or 50 people and just doing ministry, just doing what God's called him to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was in school, one of the things that I kind of lamented is there is this mentality of, you know, maybe I'll go cut my teeth in a rural situation, but then if I get it good, you know, if I become a really good preacher, then I'll move into the city and I'll try to have this big ministry. And I think that's a danger, you know, mm-hmm. I think that's not the goal. The goal is to be faithful to where God calls us to. And I think sometimes it's easy, you know, and I talk to myself, you know, about this. But to just, that's not success. In mm-hmm. the kingdom, success isn't how many people come to hear you preach every Sunday. Success is being faithful where God has put you and mm-hmm. where God has called you. And I think it's good to remember that, you know, a sermon that was given, you know, in a small town in the middle of nowhere mm-hmm. could impact my heart more than any that I've ever heard.
Right.
And I need to remind myself of that.
Well, and you think of how, you know, I'm in the middle of a series in our Sunday school class right now on church history. And you just think how many of those theologians and pastors just were in small churches, you know, for most of their careers, and their impact is still being felt. And the exponential factor of what happened as a result of that is so huge, you know, whether a John Huss or a Martin Luther or Charles Spurgeon, you know, Charles Spurgeon just preached in that little London church like forever, you know, and mm-hmm. had people praying in the boiler room, and everyone knows, you know, Spurgeon. And so just kind of the fact that he was faithful to where he was then without the benefit of Facebook and podcasting.
Facebook?
They didn't back then, no. Oh. It was a couple of years after him that it came. So let's, as we just kind of round up here, let's talk a little bit about how you feel you have encouraged pastors, or how you feel even our generation could do a better job of speaking into the lives of pastors, encouraging them, coming alongside them, and not leaving ministry in the church, and especially the work of a pastor, to the older generations, to church staffs, to all the people that are defaults for us as to who we think should be doing the job.
I've been a part of a couple of congregations where they took a special offering for the pastors, or even to buy some gift cards or a gift. And I think that's an easy way for young adults to get involved, is be generous.
Mm-hmm. Seeing this in a small church, and it's really the same in a big church, you know, that 5 or 10% of the people do 100% of the work. And I think really something practical is just step up and do something. Hey, we have a void in the nursery, you know, go help. And we have a void in this place or that place. Go do it. step in, and because the pastors are ultimately feeling the pressure that, you know, we have to serve the flock in these areas and there aren't enough people, and so what do we do? So the pastor's the one that's going to be stressing out about that. Mm-hmm. So very practically, everyone has somewhere in their church that they could serve and they would fill a great need.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of hearkening back to our Boundless Summer Challenge this summer, where we told everyone to take home a bulletin from one Sunday and pick something out of there that you can give input to, that you can help in or volunteer for. Yeah.
I think that it's also important for us to remember to focus on the gifts that our pastor has. It can be real easy, you know, after a sermon or, you know, when you're with your friends to talk about, oh, I wish our pastor would talk more about this, or I wish he wouldn't spend so much time in this book. And it's easy to kind of nitpick things and to recognize that we all have strengths and weaknesses. You know, there's things that we're good at, there are things that we're bad at. And so every pastor is going to have things that they're great at and things that they're not great at, and that we help them by pointing out the strengths. And even in conversation, you know, if things go negative, just to say, you know, he's really good at this, or he does this really well, or I appreciate this, and to try to steer it that way, because I think that it's too big of a temptation sometimes to allow ourselves to think, oh, well, this pastor over across town does this better, and it's really not helpful at all, but yeah. To really be on the positive side of that.
You know, that is so true, because we have, and I've talked to our pastors at our church about this, and we have those like tear off attendance sheets, you know, and every single week they get the same litany of stuff that is basically get rid of the organ, the music stinks, blah, blah, blah. It's the same complaints over and over again. Plus, they're doing marriage counseling. I mean, they're literally trying to walk people through infidelity. They're dealing with business meetings. They're dealing with, you know, board of elders that, you know, they're all trying to get stuff done and dealing with people's craziness. And it is, I think we weigh our imbalanced in the idea of what it means to really build up our pastors and encourage them and tell them when something impacts us, because it's so easy to talk amongst our friends, but it never gets back to them, I think. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I mean, a lot of pastors, you know, 5 years into the ministry, leave. I mean, stats, I don't have the exact stats, but it is a high number of people that, you know, they'll go to sit school, you know, give up 3 or 4 years of their life training, and then within 5 years, be out of the ministry and headed in a different direction. And I think sometimes we don't realize how challenging the ministry can be. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that's something we all need to remember, is it is a high calling, but it's a challenging calling. Mm-hmm. And so, so I'm all about supporting our pastors.
Let's do it. Okay. Everyone's hand in. Here we go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, definitely want to encourage all of you out there to do the same. And I just want to thank the panel for weighing in. I think even the stories that we can't think of, I mean, if we were to sit back and say, man, there was that one, there was that one. There really are a lot of pastors and church staff members who have built into our lives, and we probably can't even remember or recognize the impact that they've had. Make a point to do something for your pastor and your pastoral staff this month, October, which is Clergy Appreciation Month. If you need some ideas, go to our own website, parsonage.org, and click on Clergy Appreciation, and there's a whole kit there that will give you some ideas on things that you could do. We will link to that as well off of our site. So some great resources there to avail yourself of. And then tell us about it. Last year, we had a super rockin' video that some guys from a church out in Sacramento sent to us, and they were basically thanking their pastor, and they went around to everyone and did a really fun video. If you want to send us a video, do it. We may it may show up on our Facebook page. I'm just saying. So,
I happen to know who posts things on our Facebook page.
Martha may be able to post it for you.
Inside connections.
But it has to be, yes, it has to be very affirming of pastors. And we'll judge the level of affirmingness of it. And Martha's harsh. She's a harsh
affirmingness.
Critic. Affirmingness. Yes. So we will not judge your vocab or your grammatical finesse. So, but thank you guys so much for weighing in on this conversation. Hopefully it will encourage those around us and encourage the pastors in our midst.